This is Lecture 11 from the Foundations of Human Experience, also known as the Study of Man, given on September 2nd, 1919. This is the synopsis. Human physical nature in relationship to the world of the soul and the spirit. Head, developed body, dreaming soul, and sleeping spirit. Chest, wakefulness in the body soul, dreaming of the spirit. Limbs, wakefulness in the still unformed body, soul, and spirit. From this perspective, the task of the teacher is to develop the limbs and partially the chest, and to awaken the head. The educational effect of language in the early stages of childhood, and of the mother's milk in the first part of childhood. Awakening of the sleeping human spirit. Awakening the intellect through artistic involvement of the will during elementary school. The influence of education upon the child's growth forces, accelerating growth through too much emphasis upon memory, and inhibiting growth through too much emphasis on imagination. The necessity that the teacher observe the bodily development of the child over a period of years, and the senselessness of the commonly practiced frequent changes in teachers. Children who tend toward memory or imagination. The end of the synopsis. Lecture 11. If you think about the spirit and soul nature of the human body, as presented in yesterday's lecture, you will be able to quickly integrate everything necessary to comprehend the structure and development of the human body. Before we go on to describe the human body in the remaining lectures, we will first continue to illuminate the spirit-soul perspective. Yesterday you saw that the human being is comprised of three aspects, that is the head, the torso, and the limbs. You also saw that each of these three aspects has a different relationship to the world of soul and spirit. Let us first consider the form of the human head. Yesterday we said that the head is primarily physical. We saw that the chest has physical and soul characteristics, and the limbs physical, soul, and spiritual characteristics. Of course, we have not completely described the nature of the head by saying that the head is primarily physical. In reality, things are not so sharply separated from one another. We could just as well say that the head has soul and spiritual characteristics, only in a different way than the chest and limbs. When a human being is born, the head is primarily physical. That is, the form of the physical head expresses what, in a certain sense, constitutes the head. That is why the head looks as it does. It is also the first thing formed in the human embryonic development. The general human spirit-soul characteristic first appears in the head. What is the relationship of the physical head to the spirit and soul? The head is the most completely formed part of the body. Because everything necessary for its formation has in earlier stages of development already passed from the animal-like stages up to the human being, it can physically be the most completely formed. The soul is connected with the head at birth and during the child's first years of life. Everything connected with the soul dreams in the head. Also, the spirit sleeps in the head. In the human head, we find an unusual integration of body, soul, and spirit. We have an extremely well-developed body in the head. In it, we have a dreaming soul, a soul that clearly dreams, and a spirit that still sleeps. Our task is to see how to harmonize these facts with the development of the whole human being. This development is such that, until the change of teeth, the human being is primarily an imitative being. Children imitate what they see in their surroundings. They can do that because the spirit aspect of their heads sleeps. Therefore, they can spend time with the spirit aspect of the head outside the bodily aspect. That is, spend time with it in their surroundings. When you sleep, you exist with your spirit soul outside your body. Children exist outside their heads with their spirit soul, with their sleeping spirit and dreaming soul. They live in their surroundings. This is the reason children are beings that imitate. It is also why a love of the surroundings, in particular a love for the parents, develops in children's dreaming souls. However, when children acquire their second set of teeth, when their change of teeth is complete, it reflects the conclusion of the development of the head. Even though the head is complete when we are born, it still goes through a final stage of development during the first 7 years of life. The conclusion of this development occurs with the change of teeth. What is actually concluded? The development of the form is concluded. At this time, human beings have taken what hardens and gives form into their physical bodies. When we see the second set of teeth breaking through in a child, we can say that the child has finished the first confrontation with the world. That is, the child has done what is necessary to provide form. During the period when the child completes the formation of the head, something else occurs in the human chest. In the chest, things are very different than in the head. From birth, from the very beginning, the chest has physical and soul characteristics. Unlike the head, the chest does not simply have physical characteristics. The chest has physical and soul characteristics, and only the spirit exists in a dreaming state outside it. When we observe children during the first years of life, we must focus upon the greater awareness, the greater liveliness of the chest aspect compared with the head aspect. It would be completely incorrect if we were to view human beings as single entities chaotically thrown together. The limbs are again different. Here, from the first moment of life, spirit, soul, and body are intimately connected and permeate each other. Here a child is first completely awake, as those who are to raise this kicking and wiggling child notice. Everything is awake, only undeveloped. The secret of human beings is that at birth the spirit aspect of the head is very well developed but sleeping, and the soul aspect of the head is well developed but dreaming. They must slowly awaken. At birth, the limb aspect of the human being, although very much awake, is unformed and undeveloped. Actually, we only need to develop the human limb aspect and part of the chest aspect. Here you have the first real attribute of education. The human limbs and chest have the task of awakening the head. You develop the limb aspect and a part of the chest aspect and allow them to awaken the other parts of the human chest and head. From this you can see that children present you with something substantial to work with. Children offer you complete spirits and relatively complete souls, which they brought into life at birth. You only need to develop the child's immature spirit and their even more immature soul. If this were not the case, education and teaching would be impossible. If you imagine that we want to teach all of the spirit that a human being brings into the world, then as teachers we would need to be perfectly aware of what this person could become. In this case, you might quickly give up teaching, because you could only teach children to be as intelligent and genial as yourself. Of course, you would then be in the position of having to teach children who are in some ways more intelligent and more genial than you are. That is possible only because in teaching we are concerned with only part of the human being. That is, the part we can teach, even though we are not as intelligent, as genial, or perhaps even as good as the student. The best we can do is to educate the will and part of the feeling soul. What we can educate through the will, that is, through the limbs and through feeling, through part of the human chest, we can bring to the level of perfection we ourselves have reached. Just as a servant can awaken someone who is much more intelligent than he or she, so we can teach someone who may be more genial or even better than we something beyond what we ourselves are. Of course, we must be clear that regarding intellectual things, we certainly do not need to be at the same level as a developing child. However, because so much depends upon the development of will, we must strive to be as good as possible. The children can become better than we are, but probably will not unless our teaching is supplemented by something from the world or other people. In these lectures, I have mentioned that a certain genius lives in language. The genius of language is, as I have said, ingenious. It is more clever than we are. We can learn much from the way language fits together and carries its spirit. However, there is genius in more things in our surroundings than language. Think for a moment about what we have just learned, namely that regarding the head, humans enter the world with a sleeping spirit and a dreaming soul. Recall that it is necessary from the very beginning, from birth, to educate children through the will, because unless we act upon them through the will, we cannot reach the spirit sleeping in their heads. We would create a major gap in human development if we could not in some way reach the spirit aspect in the heads of people. When human beings are born, the spirit in the heads is asleep. We cannot get a child with kicking legs to do gymnastics or eurythmy. This is impossible. We also cannot get a child, when it is still kicking its legs and at best crying, to take up musical instruction. We cannot yet reach the child through art. We cannot yet find a clearly defined bridge from the will to the child's sleeping spirit. Later, when we can somehow reach the child's will, we can act upon the child's sleeping spirit, if we can only get the child to say those first words, since a confronting of the will already exists there. Then the willed activity we can coax from the vocal cords through these first words acts on the spirit sleeping in the head and begins to awaken it. In the very beginning, however, we do not have any real bridge. There is no stream flowing from the limbs in which the will and spirit are awake to the sleeping spirit of the head. Some other means is required. In the first period of human life, we cannot accomplish much as teachers. Something else exists that is also genius, that is, spirit outside us. Language has its genius, but in the first stage of child development, we are unable to appeal to the spirit of language. However, nature itself has its own genius and spirit. If this were not so, as human beings, we would wither away because of the developmental gap at the beginning of our childhood. The genius of nature creates something that can form the bridge. From the development of the limbs, that is, from the limb human, a substance is created that is directly connected to and contains something of this limb human, and that substance is milk. Women create milk in direct connection to the upper limbs, that is, the arms. The milk-producing organs are an inner continuation of the limbs. In the animal and human kingdoms, milk is the only substance that has an inner kinship to the nature of the limbs. In a certain sense, milk is born out of the nature of the limbs, and therefore has the power of the limb's essence still in it. When the mother gives a child her milk, the milk acts as the only substance, or at least the main substance, to awaken the sleeping spirit that exists in all matter and manifests itself where it should. Milk carries its own spirit, and this spirit has the task of awakening the child's sleeping spirit. This is not simply a picture. It is a well-founded scientific fact that the genius of nature that creates milk out of the secret essence of nature is the awakener of the child's sleeping human spirit. We must gain insight into such secret relationships and world existence. Only then can we grasp the wonderful regularities the world holds. We slowly understand that we are painfully ignorant when we create theories about material substances as if these substances were only an insignificant expanse to be divided into atoms and molecules. That is not what matter is. Matter is something like milk that is created with an inner need to awaken the sleeping human being, spirit. Just as we can speak of the needs of human beings and animals, that is, speak of strength based in will, in the same way, we can speak generally of the needs of matter. We can look at milk in a comprehensive way only if we say that as it is created, milk desires to be the awakener of the child's human spirit. If we properly look at things in this way, everything in our surroundings becomes alive. We can, therefore, never be free of the relationships between human beings and everything else that exists in the world. You can see from what I have just said that the genius of nature attends to human development during the first stage of life. In a certain sense, we take up the work of the genius of nature when we further develop and educate the child. Through our language and deeds, which the child imitates and which affect the child through the will, we continue that activity we have seen the genius of nature effecting through milk. Only we use humans as a means of providing this nutrition. We also see that nature teaches, since the nutrition received through milk is the first means of education. Nature teaches naturally. We begin to teach the soul through our language and deeds, which act upon the child educationally. That is why it is so important to be conscious that as teachers, we cannot do very much with the head. When it is born into the world, the head already presents us with what it will become. We can awaken what is in the head, but we have no possibility of putting more there. Here we need to become clear that birth can bring only certain things into earthly physical existence. The things that have arisen through superficial convention during the course of cultural development are totally unimportant for the spiritual world. For instance, our conventional means of reading or writing are, of course, not brought by the child. I have already discussed this from another point of view. Spirits do not write, nor do they read. They do not read in books, nor write with a pen. It is only a creation of spiritualists to think that spirits work with human language or even write. What speech or even writing contains is simply convention living upon the earth. We do something good for the child only when we do not teach these conventions of reading and writing intellectually, but instead implant reading and writing into the child through the chest and limbs. Of course, we have not simply left the children in their cradles before they are 7 years old and begin elementary school. They have done things, and through imitating adults, have helped themselves along, so that in a certain sense their head spirit has awakened. When children begin elementary school, we can use what they have already awakened in their head spirit to teach reading and writing in the conventional way, but then we begin to damage this head spirit through our influence. For this reason, I have said that to be good, the instruction of reading and writing must be based in art. We must first introduce elements of drawing and painting and music, because these affect the human limb and chest aspects and affect only indirectly the head. However, they do awaken what is in the head. You do not torture the head aspect in the way we do if we simply teach reading and writing in the intellectual conventional way. If we first allow children to draw and then develop letters from their drawings, we teach the children from the limbs to the head. We show them an F, for example. If we make children look at the F and copy it, we act upon intellect, and then the intellect trains the will. This is the wrong way. The proper way is to do as much as possible through the will to awaken the intellect. We can do this only if we begin with the artistic and then go on to forming the intellect. During the first years of teaching, when we first received the children, we must teach them reading and writing in an artistic way. You must realize that while you are teaching children, they have things to do other than what you are doing with them. Children have all kinds of things to do which belong only indirectly to your domain. Children must grow. They must grow, and you need to be clear that while you are teaching, children must grow properly. What does that mean? It means that you should not disturb growth through your teaching. You should not engage children in anything that would disturb their growth. Your teaching must work in parallel with the needs of growth. What I have to say here is particularly important for the elementary school years. In the same way that What arises from the head before the change of teeth is connected with the creation of form. What occurs during the period of elementary school is the development of life, that is, growth and everything connected with it until puberty. The development of life arising out of the chest activity concludes only at puberty. Thus, during the development in elementary school, your primary concern is with the human chest aspect. You cannot be successful unless you realize that while you are teaching children, they develop through the chest organism. In a certain sense, you must be a comrade of nature, since nature develops children through the chest, that is, through breathing, nutrition, movement, and so forth. You must be a good friend of natural development. However, if you have no understanding of natural development, how can you possibly be a good friend to it? If, for example, you do not know how to teach through the soul in order to slow down or accelerate growth, how can you teach well? The way you affect the soul to a certain extent gives you the possibility of disturbing the growth forces in the developing children so that they may grow tall and lanky, which can be damaging under certain circumstances. To a certain extent, you can unhealthfully retard the children's growth so that they remain short and stocky. Of course, only to a certain degree, but you can do this. Therefore, you need insight into the relationships of human growth. You must have this insight from the point of view of both the soul and the physical body. From the perspective of the soul, how can we gain insight about growth? Here we must turn to something better than conventional psychology. From a more complete psychology, we can learn that everything that accelerates human growth, forces, and forms human growth so that people shoot up and become lanky, is connected in a certain sense with the formation of memory. If we require too much of memory, then within certain limits, we make lanky people out of children. If we require too much from imagination, then we retard people in their growth. Memory and imagination are connected with the human developmental forces in a secret way. We must acquire the proper eye in order to turn our attention to these connections, EYEI. For example, the teacher must be able to cast a comprehensive eye upon the class at the beginning of the school year, particularly when the children enter the phases that begin at age 9 and 12. The teacher must review the physical development of the children and notice how they look. At the end of the school year or of another period, the teacher must again review and notice the changes that have occurred. The result of these two reviews must be the teacher's realization that one child's growth may not have been enough during this period and another may have shot up. The teacher must then ask, in the next school year or next period of time, how can I effect a balance between imagination and memory that counters these anomalies? This is why it is so important that you have the same children during all of the school years, and why it is so idiotic that children have a different teacher every year. However, there is another side to this. At the beginning of each school year, and at the beginning of each developmental period at 7, 9, and 12 years of age, teachers slowly come to know the children. They come to know children who are clearly the imagination type, who reorganize everything. And they come to know children who are clearly memory types, who can remember everything. Teachers must also become familiar with this. They must come to know it through the two reviews I just mentioned. However, teachers must extrapolate from this knowledge, not through an external observation of growth, but through imagination and memory. Whether a child indicates the possibility of growing too quickly, which will happen if the child's memory is too good, or if the child is likely to become stocky from too much imagination. Clichés and jargon will not help you to recognize the connection between body and soul. You must instead be able to observe the interconnections between body, soul, and spirit in the growing human being. Children with much imagination grow differently than those gifted with memory. In modern psychology, everything is finished. Memory is there, and psychologists describe it. Imagination is there, and it, too, is described. However, in the real world, Everything is interconnected, and we can learn to understand these interconnections only if we can make our comprehension comfortable with them. That means we do not use our comprehension only to properly define everything, but instead we make this comprehension flexible, so that what it has recognized, it can change inwardly, it can change conceptually. In itself, the spirit soul leads into the physical to a degree where we could say that through effects on the body, through the milk, the genius of nature raises the child at the beginning of life. In the same way, after the change of teeth, we raise children by slowly feeding them with art during elementary school. As children near the end of elementary school, another change occurs. Their independent judgment, their own feelings of personality, and their desires for independence will slowly sparkle in from a later period. We consider this when we form a curriculum so that we use what should enter in. The end of Lecture 11.